Greetings once again. Welcome. Bienvenidos. Hola. Aloha. Weinihau. Namaste. Konnichiwa. Bonjour. Guten Tag. Half a day. Salam. Shalom. Peace. Now, go vegan. Peace. Now, go vegan. From the entertainment capital of the McNugget Pharmaceutical Vivisection Prison Industrial Complex, where you too can bid on eBay for P. Diddy's personally designed for him lynx fur and denim jacket. Only $3,000 on eBay. You too can bid. And, well, actually, he put it on eBay. Nobody bid on it, you know? Nobody put in a bid for the P. Diddly Piddly fur coat. You know, fur makes animals who wear it so beautiful, and people who wear it, so ugly, muggly, piddly, diddly. This is Go Vegan with Bob Linden. For the next hour, your radio will be veganized for your protection by the planet's first and only vegan radio show on mainstream broadcast airwaves. And heard worldwide at www.goveganradio.com. And thanks for all the emails and words of support for the message of compassion and hope for animal liberation. Hi to all the folks who emailed from Australia and New Zealand and Belgium and Germany just in the past few days. Incidentally, we do accept donations in euros. Well as all the people who emailed listening in that very strange, curious, and somewhat barbaric civilization of that bizarre cult of cadaver eaters eating up the world from that corporation of the United States of Listeria. Swine! Swine-filled stomachs everywhere. That'll be the case a little later as the masses are about to consume pig bodies soaked in bee vomit. Thanks to all who came out yesterday to demonstrate at Honey Baked Ham. We have a studio audience today, and it's not a laugh track. I don't have to, you know, so pig body soaked in bee vomit. That's what people will be eating later. That'll be my big joke of the day. thanks to all who came out yesterday to demonstrate at Honey Baked Ham in Santa Monica. Just pointing out that those dining on death, eating pig corpse, were celebrating Easter with a meal that Jesus, the Jewish rabbi, would never eat, but would certainly condemn, I'm sure. Why should anybody die for the sin of eating meat? Why should you? Huh? Because you don't want to be blah for Easter dinner? That's the new advertising campaign of those who profit from animal sacrifice, the other white meat. Don't be blah. You wouldn't be blah if you served a delicious faux ham for Easter dinner tonight, like the recipe available at pita.org, where it says, well, spring is a time for new beginnings, so it's the perfect time to try something new at the dinner table. Celebrate Easter with our updated take on a traditional dish, soy-based faux ham with a zesty apricot glaze. Our glazed ham is not only delicious, it's rich in heart-healthy soy protein and dietary fiber, plus it's 100% cholesterol-free. And the recipe that they have on the website, well, everyone will love it, especially the pigs. Mustard and apricot glazed ham, it's a quarter cup Dijon mustard, a quarter cup apricot jam, a tablespoon minced fresh chives, and 2 tablespoons extra virgin olive oil, a tablespoon of horseradish, salt and pepper to taste, and 1 veg SW ham, which is available from veggieworld.com. That's VEGIEworld.com, sliced into 1-inch thick rounds. And what you do is you combine all of the ingredients except the vegetarian ham in a bowl, and you mix well, and then you brush the mixture over both sides of each slice of so-called ham and arrange overlapping each piece on a baking sheet, cover with foil, and bake in a preheated oven at 350 degrees for 20 minutes. And then you uncover the ham and cook for an additional 10 to 15 minutes. That makes 8 servings. If you missed this recipe, you can listen to this show over and over again at goveganradio.com, where it appears every Sunday Might be a little late this Sunday as we coordinate the holiday. And also, if you go to pita.org for the recipes there, you also can see accompanying the ham, slow-cooked collard greens and savory mashed potatoes as side dishes. So it's a dish that you will love and really the pigs will love too. Now, you probably think that I offer this recipe hoping that I may be the new Julia Child of vegetarianism or the new Emeril of the vegetable. But alas, while I may aspire, it'll probably only be that,
I know, and you're going to be the hottest controversial vegan talk show host on the face of the planet.
And I'm sure that what you would expect from me would be to not concentrate on that which is the propaganda set forth by the ABC, NNBC, BS, Fox, Republoil Can, National Party, Monopoly, Censorship Channel. Sorry, Go Vegan, a project of 501c3, International Humanities Center. Donations are tax deductible to the extent allowable by law. Certainly Go Vegan with Bob Linden will not focus on this distraction that we've had all week. Everybody talking about Terri Schiavo, completely hijacking the airwaves, complete with, the Keystone Commissar, George W. Bush, getting onto Air Force One in his SpongeBob SquarePants pajamas. Okay, George W., we don't have to practice your pronunciation of nuclear today, just your penmanship. That's right. You're signing a special law. Yes, all the cons in Congress, wearing their SpongeBob pajamas in the middle of the night in a special session. Everybody will be talking about the woman with a feeding tube, and no one will remember a thing about Arachnam's second anniversary. 100,000 Iraqis dead, 2,000 Americans dead. Well, how nice to remember an individual's suffering. Statistics make things so unreal. Maybe we should remember that 102,000 dead at least means 102,000 individual lives lost. Cultural, acceptable mass murder like that committed by honey-baked ham. Each so-called ham means somebody was murdered. Thou shalt not kill. I thought 10 billion animals, 10,000 million animals, feeling beings killed one by one, one by screaming, one, each one stabbed to death in real-life violent horror, much worse than Mel Gibson's movie was. This is real. And, you do have to wonder why George W. Bush and the cons of Congress would be so concerned about removing a feeding tube from one in a persistent vegetative state, having never shown concern for anyone else so far. Perhaps they're afraid that, we'll remove their tubes too, They seem to be acting like they're in a persistent vegetative state. And if the most powerful nation in the world can come to a screeching halt for one person in a vegetative state with the most limited physical and mental capacity, well, what of those animals who currently enjoy a greater mental and physical capacity than Ms. Schiavo does? Shouldn't we show similar consideration to them? I don't know if you had the opportunity to see what was in the Observer, but it says, studies show that farmyard animals have a range of emotions and sharp intelligence. This was Sunday, March 6th in the Observer. It says, cursed with a maddening cluck and a comic strut that would put John Cleese to shame, the chicken, headless or not, is thought by many to be one of the world's daffiest animals, yet new research reveals they are in fact rather clever, evidence that the humble hen can master complex tricks that would make most dog owners proud is among a wealth of research to be unveiled at the largest conference ever staged to investigate animal sentience. The findings, seen by the Observer, as I continue to quote, offer compelling evidence that creatures caricatured as mindlessly dumb can feel emotions usually associated with humans, such as jealousy, love, and loss. Some are crafty enough to hatch Machiavellian plots worthy of those who stalk the corridors of Whitehall, it says here. Sheep, ridiculed for a non-questioning herd mentality, possess a sharp sense of individuality and can recognize the faces of at least 10 people and 50 other sheep for at least 2 years. Scientists at the Babraham Institute in Cambridge also discovered that sheep react to facial expressions and, like humans, prefer a smile to a grimace. Further studies, which reinforce the notion that sheep are more like us than previously believed, involve tests showing they mourn absent individuals. Scientists claim such findings are increasingly challenging the belief that farmyard animals have no sense of self, a notion that could have profound implications for the way Britain's creatures are farmed. Pigs were similarly found to have a cerebral capacity beyond the popular preconception of a farm animal. Researchers at Bristol University found that pigs are masters of deceit, deliberately misleading other pigs if it would result in more food for themselves. Chickens command an extraordinary degree of self-control over food. They're willing to delay gratification if they think a larger portion will be offered in due course. And other research that threatens the longevity of the phrase headless chicken found that the creatures boast a greater sense of spatial awareness than young children do. In tests, chickens could learn tricks such as opening doors and navigating mazes with a speed usually the preserve of dogs and horses. These findings suggest that the character of Ginger, you remember Ginger, the sharp-witted chicken who leads her colleagues to escape from a farm in the 2000 film Chicken Run, may not be as ironic as its makers intended. Another creature similarly viewed by modern society as little more than a benign food source, the cow, is also shown to be an astute animal capable of solving riddles with an intellect more traditionally associated with an ape. Studies at Oxford University found that Betty, who was a Caledonian heifer, instinctively bent a piece of wire using a gap in her food tray to create a hook that allowed her to scrape food from the bottom of a jar. Scores of scientists and government delegates from 43 countries are attending the London conference to discuss whether society's attitude to animals needs re-examining. And so the conference comes at a time when the food industry is being forced to address mounting consumer concern over the structure of Britain's food industry and factory farming. Among those speaking are officials from McDevils and the World Bank's private sector, whose responsibilities include livestock investment. Leading theologians will also argue that Christian and Islamic faiths need to update their attitudes toward animals by bestowing an intrinsic value similar to that given to people. Well, those wonderful, intelligent creatures are certainly challenged by the current calendar. Easter is murder on pigs, as we talked about. Honey-baked hams and the Easter rabbit and the Easter eggs that come from the hen. You know, the number of rabbit farms is growing rapidly in the southern United States, reported the Miami Herald, with at least 248 such operations in Alabama, Tennessee, and Mississippi alone. Florida also has about 60 rabbit farms. The growth is attributable in part to increasing acceptance of rabbit flesh, ooh, yuck, among southern chefs at high-end restaurants, ooh, and on cruise ships also, and the ease with which rabbits are bred and farmed. And there's this horrible website where somebody is threatening to eat the rabbit if he doesn't raise enough donations. It's very, very weird indeed. Save Toby. That's been in the news, too. And at least on behalf of chickens, let me mention the United Poultry Concerns proudly announces International Respect for Chickens Day, Wednesday, May 4th, 2005. And it says here, chickens are cheerful, intelligent birds. The mother hen tenderly cares for her chicks, and roosters protect their families and flocks. So please have an action for chickens on May 4th. Show the world that chickens are people, too. Okay, that from United Poultry Concerns. And you know, when it comes down to it, if you yourself want to avoid the misfortune of a persistent or a vegetative state yourself, well, wouldn't it make sense to stop eating animals and go vegan? You know, a stroke can put you in a state that many would consider vegetative. It is the greatest debilitating disease in this country. 200,000 a year are afflicted, and it is related to meat and dairy consumption. Symptoms of mad cow disease can degenerate into that, like a vegetative state also. And that's one bite of a burger or a steak. So please, while you still have the capacity to think, go vegan. Don't die for the sins of eating meat and killing other animals. And by the way, you know, you can save a life by removing a feeding tube, those force-feeding tubes down ducks' and geese' throats. No foie gras, okay? Anyway, today on Go Vegan with Bob Linden, we have a contingent of Christian vegetarians from the Seventh-day Adventists. They are here, and they will talk about their biblical message of health. Also, if Jesus were alive today, what would he do? What would he eat? Would he be a vegan animal rights activist? Was he a vegan animal rights activist? We explore controversial historical study with author and historian Rin Berry, whose books include Food for the Gods, which we've discussed on this show recently. And I might point out to you that this is Go Vegan with Bob Linden, the planet's first and only vegan radio program in the establishment media. Free speech is expensive, so please help me pay for radio airtime so that the animals can have a voice. They pay, but they pay with their lives. You pay with a tax-deductible donation. You can make your check payable to Go Vegan and mail it to P.O. Box 40246, San Diego 92164. That's Go Vegan, P.O. Box 40246, San Diego 92164. You can also donate online at goveganradio.com. And just go to the website there where each show appears every Sunday. And we also can take in-kind contributions, cars, trucks, planes, computers, you name it. You can email me. It's bob@goveganradio.com or call me at 818-623-6477. And also, if you go to the website, sign up for email alerts. And coming up a little bit later in the hour, also details on Earth Day for the Animals on Go Vegan with Bob Linden. I'm always talking about how delicious Veganaise is. No vegan kitchen should be without it. It dresses up even the simplest foods, like my favorite sandwich, avocado, tomato, and Veganaise. Or is it mashed up chickpeas, celery, onions, and Veganaise? Or a tofu burger with Veganaise? Well, I do know I love it on baked or steamed yams. Well, you think you'd read about Veganaise in a cookbook, it winning the American Tasting Institute Award? So I was surprised to see Veganaise in a book about stroke prevention. Yet there it is, page 194, in Stroke Free for Life by David Webers, MD, Chair, Cerebrovascular Diseases, and Director, Stroke Research Center, Mayo Clinic. And who would know better about a Mayo alternative? Try Veganaise, now in organic. Available at Follow Your Heart, Canoga Park, California, and natural food stores everywhere. And also from Follow Your Heart, don't forget vegan gourmet cheese alternatives. They melt, so you don't have to use scary dairy anymore, and you can still enjoy all the flavor when you have, well, enchiladas or pizza or nachos. That's vegan gourmet cheese alternatives. And also from Follow Your Heart, chicken-free chicken, all the taste, none of the bird. And I was at the Natural Products Expo last week, and Follow Your Heart has some great new vegan salad dressings. I think you're going to love them.
M-E-A-T-S-T-I-N-K-S. Meat stinks.
That's the truth. Okay, so you're a vegan, you need a set of wheels, and, well, I have just the place that will treat you like the VIP you are, the vegan important person. That is Bear Auto at 1944 South Santa Fe Drive in Vista, open 7 days a week. The phone number is 760-597-1600. Hundreds of recycled cars available, boats and collector cars too. Go to the website. It's bearautosales.com, bearautosales.com. You can see the complete inventory. You can also get directions at the website and info on in-house financing. Bear Auto buys cars. We'll give cash. Don't worry. You'll feel comfortable there. There are PETA posters on the wall, and no high-pressure sales tactics there, except maybe from Chet and Lewis, the two rescued sales poodles who are always on the property there. So go check it out, Bear Auto in Vista. That's bearautosales.com.
Mommy, Daddy, no circus. It hurts animals.
And I just want to point out to you that a lot of people are considering. I just got some emails this week from people who say, well, I want to go vegan. I want to go vegetarian. What do I do? Well, you can get yourself a free vegetarian starter kit. That's a good start. And you can get that from PETA. Go to the website PETA.org or GoVeg.com. Everything you need to eat right for your health, the animals, and the earth. And you just look through here. There are great recipes. Oh, there's a section here, vegetarian diets for pregnancy and children. So it covers those issues. Raising vegan kids. That's in here. And then, of course, we have many recipes that that you'll love, the kids will love. So that's a good way to get started, the vegetarian starter kit from PETA. And PETA's wonderful president was on our program recently, president and founder Ingrid Newkirk, and I suggest you pick up her wonderful new book, Making Kind Choices. Making Kind Choices, Everyday Ways to Enhance Your Life Through Earth and Animal-Friendly Living. It's worth it for the foreword alone by Sir Paul McCartney. So pick up your Making Kind Choices at bookstores everywhere or go to the website PETA.org. Okay, we'll stop the spelling bee now and get back into the planet's first and only vegan program on commercial airwaves. And today we open the show with Rin Berry, the historical advisor to the North American Vegetarian Society. He's on the advisory board of EarthSave. In his lectures, articles, and books, he has specialized in the study of vegetarianism from an historical perspective. His first book, The New Vegetarians, was a collection of biographical sketches and interviews of famous contemporary vegetarians. His second book, Famous Vegetarians and Their Favorite Recipes, is a biographical history of vegetarianism that ranges from Pythagoras and the Buddha to Nobel laureate Isaac Bashevis Singer, the Beatles, and beyond. And in his book, Food for the Gods, Vegetarianism and the World's Religions, Rin has written essays on vegetarianism in each of the world's religions, Jainism, Buddhism, Hinduism, Taoism, Judaism, Christianity, and Islam. He's also included conversations with prominent vegetarian thinkers from each of those religions. In the back of the book, of course, recipes, because vegans like to eat. Rin is also the author of Hitler, neither vegetarian nor animal lover, which, according to Publishers Weekly, lays to rest the myth that Adolf Hitler was a vegetarian. Rin contributes frequently to both scholarly and spiritual publications, and he's also one of the authors of the best-selling restaurant and shopping guide, The Vegan Guide to New York City. And welcome back to the show, Rin Berry.
Pleasure to be here, Bob, as always.
Great. It's great to have you again. Now, I work under the... my thought is that if anybody is a great religious leader, spiritual leader, he or she would, I would think, would have to be vegan. And, well, my thinking is, well, if Jesus were alive today, would he be a vegan animal rights activist? And then the other question is, well, was he a vegan animal rights activist?
Well, my answer to that is that he would be today as he was then. I think he was definitely a spiritual vegan and ethical vegan, and he was also an activist, tantamount to sort of a member of the ALF, the Animal Liberation Front, who actually went out and performed direct action, put his life on the line. He went into the temple, Jerusalem. He saw that animals were being bought and sold and sacrificed and cooked on the altars, and he interfered with the commerce in animals. He made, as they describe in the Gospels, he made a scourge out of rope. He upset the tables of the money changers, and he drove the animals from the temple so that they couldn't. Sell them, kill them, and cook them.
So,
for that, he was brought up on charges and eventually tried and crucified. So, again, he was an activist who put his life in jeopardy to save animals.
Now, I know that there was a quote in your book, Food for the Gods, that talked about... I guess the quote was, and my Adventist friends seem to... look at me quizzically when they heard it, and it was don't turn my father's house into a meat market, and they said what did you say it was don't the what
That's
the
right.
What they say the correct meaning should have been. Judith, you want to jump in? And I'll just let you know that we have a number of people here who are from who are Seventh-day Adventists, and Judith Miranda and Jewel McKeever, Ed Cavell, Yolanda Palmer, and so they're around the microphones too. And how would you explain your translation as to Judith? What would you say? It wasn't "Don't turn my father's house into a meat market or butcher shop." It would be.
Hi, Barry. It was good to talk to you today. And I just want to explain this point to you. You know, it seems to be a lot of emphasis on the meat that the people were selling in the temple. Mm-hmm. But the point that Jesus was driving at is that he said, "You will not make my house a den of thieves." In other words, these people were selling in God's holy temple. It was not the fact that they were killing animals. The thing is that they had no respect for God's temple. So they began to kill and was making money in the temple. Now, if they were, they killed animals, they ate animals. If they were killing animals for food, what they usually do, that would not have been a problem. But they had no respect for God's temple. They began to sell and to make the money. And that's where the emphasis was. He said, "You will not make my house a den of thieves."
Well, it depends on which gospel you're looking at. I'm looking at the Gospel of John, in which...
Were bugs in John?
John 2.
John chapter 2.
2:13, he says, arete tota entauthain me poeta son oikon...
To what, I'm sorry?
Mu oikon emporion. And I translated that, do not make the house of my father into a market. And since they were buying and selling animals and slaughtering them, it was a meat market. He said the word emperon in Greek means market, not den of thieves. In the other Gospels, they use the phrase den of thieves. In the Gospel of John, they use the word emperon, which means market.
Okay, but Barry, what do you do in the market?
Rinberry.
I'm sorry, Rin, what do you do in the market?
Well, in this particular
market, don't you make money?
They were selling animals for trafficking in their flesh. So it's a meat market.
Yeah.
You have to look at the context.
So, Rin, tell us a bit about why would Jesus be a vegetarian? Why, and what would you use as proof? And then I believe I read in your book about lost scrolls of Jesus.
Yeah, in the Nag Hammadi Gospels, which were discovered in 1945, they unearthed the scrolls that indicate that Jesus and John the Baptist were vegetarians. They've also isolated the work of the writings of Epiphanius, who was a bishop in the 4th century CE, who was actually a defender of the canon, and he was a sort of a heretic hunter who was trying to root out the heresies. But in the process of doing so, he preserved a gospel which was called the Gospel of the Ebionites. And in the Gospel of the Ebionites, he quotes Jesus as saying, "I have come to end the sacrifices, to annul the sacrifices." And in it, Jesus also is invited to partake of the Passover feast of the lamb, the Passover lamb, and he refuses, saying, "I will not eat the lamb." So, in that gospel, he is clearly portrayed as a vegetarian, and as is John the Baptist in that same gospel. And this was preserved for us by a church, one of the church fathers, who was in the business of running down heresies and deleting heresies from the canon. So that and the other evidence for his being a vegetarian is just the fact that most people were vegetarians in antiquity simply because animal flesh was a luxury food. The majority of people lived in conditions of very much like that of the Third World, in which animal flesh was an improcurable luxury. To think of Somalia or the Australian outback, where animal flesh is just simply beyond the means of the average person. Well, that's how it was in the ancient world. The majority of people throughout the Mediterranean, throughout the world, were vegetarians simply because they did not have the financial wherewithal to purchase animals and paid for them to be butchered. It was a very tedious process, capturing animals and butchering them. We have no idea what it was like because animal flesh arrives in plastic wrapped in supermarkets, and it's readily available. But in the ancient world, it was a very involved.
Do you think the basis for the diet was in Genesis, the book of Genesis, 1:29?
Of course, yes. In Genesis, of course, the primordial couple is in paradise. Adam and Eve are depicted as vegetarians, and God said that he had given humans the grain and fruit for as food. And also in Genesis 9, which is the governing scripture among the anti-sacrificial groups like the Ebionites and the Essenes, God said forbids humans to eat food that contains blood, and for that reason members of the anti-sacrificial sects like the Essenes and the Ebionites and the Nazarenes would not have been eating animal flesh. And Jesus is considered by scholars to have been a member of the Nazarenes or Ebionites, who were anti-sacrificial and who abstained from eating animal flesh.
So, Book of Genesis, Genesis 1:29-31 says, God said, "Behold, I have given you every plant yielding seed that is upon the face of all the earth, and every tree with seed in its fruit. You shall have them for food." And then it continues, "And to every beast of the earth, and to every bird of the air, and to everything that creeps on the earth, everything that has the breath of life, I have given every green plant for food." And it was so. God said, God saw everything that he made, and indeed, it was very good. So how do things change later to where it's not so good?
Well, I mean, supposedly after the flood, God made a concession to Noah, allow humans to eat animal flesh, simply because he felt they were incapable of rising to the level of being conscientious vegetarians. So that's when the degeneration sets in. But in Genesis 9:3, he says, "Do not eat flesh containing blood." So that is the prevailing guiding principle among the anti-sacrificial Jewish sects like the Ebionites and the Nazarians. Since it's impossible to eat flesh that does not contain blood, it was simply off the menu.
Right. Ren, why do people eat pig for Easter?
Pig for Easter?
Yeah, I mean, it's not a food that Jesus would eat. It's not a food that that Jews would approve. So,
that's right. Well, obviously they've fallen away from the teachings. I mean, certainly there's nothing in any of the in the Gospels or even in the Torah that would condone eating a pig, and mm-hmm. not in the Islamic faith that pig is considered to be a taboo food, and so in none of the Abrahamic religions is the eating of pig flesh condoned.
Mm-hmm. Stay with me on the line, Rin. I want to talk to Judith Miranda,
sure.
Jule McKeever, Ed Cavell, and Yolanda Palmer a bit about being a Seventh-day Adventist and how is it that Adventists are vegetarian? Why?
Is that a question for me?
No, that's we'll talk to. Looks like Ed Cavell is taking the microphone here, and the basis for vegetarianism for Seventh-day Adventists.
Well, first of all, I'd like to say that I congratulate you on what you believe. I believe you base it in somewhat on the Bible. We believe that the Bible is the foundation for what we proclaim. One of the things that we subscribe to is there's a universal problem in humanity, and that universal problem is sin. And 80% of Americans call themselves Christians. And the word Christian denotes one whose sin have been covered by the blood of Jesus through faith. Now, I have something interesting to present to you. The very first sin resulted in death of animals. And that death resulted in the Lord making coats of skins to clothe Adam and Eve following that sin. Mm-hmm. It says in Genesis 3:21, "Unto Adam also and to his wife did the Lord make coats of skin and clothe them." Because of sin, Adam had to kill his precious little pet animal, and from that he realized that blood was a significant part of reconciling Adam and Eve back to God. See, sin separates. And we are vegetarians. We believe that because of the prophecy that tells us that animals are disease. Before, and you need to understand that actually 50% of Adventists are vegetarians, not everyone. Mm-hmm. We do not have a doctrine that says that one must be a vegetarian as an Adventist. We advocate good health principles. We have a book called Counsels on Diets and Food, which gives guidelines. And perhaps you may have read that book. But it goes back way back in 1900s, early 1900s. And it says that there will come a time when it will be no longer safe to eat the flesh of animals. And we know that the flesh of animals deranges the mind. It causes confusion. It brings an animal passion within people. And so it is safer for a Christian and to live to the highest order, to bring honor and glory to God and to everything he does, whether he eat or drink or whatever he does, all to the honor of God. So one of the reasons that we believe that we are vegetarians is that we subscribe to the foundational belief that it is the best diet for a person to have to be free from disease and live a long, healthy life.
Now, there was a study of 25,000 vegetarian Seventh-day Adventists. It noted a definite link between meat consumption and heart disease. Among men aged 45 to 64, those who ate meat daily were three times more likely to die from heart disease than those who did not eat meat. That study of Seventh-day Adventists. And did you have a response, Ren?
I would say, I agree with you. The earliest longevity studies were conducted on Adventists, and they certainly showed that they outlived the average meat eater in America. And I would just also like to add that Ellen White, the founder of Seventh-day Adventism, had in her Otsego vision in Otsego, Michigan, had a vision in which she saw that it was revealed to her that God intended humans to be vegetarian and Jesus was a vegetarian. So, you could just consult the visions of Ellen White, the founding prophet of Adventism, and you'll find that these ideas have been enshrined in her own doctrines, in the earliest doctrines of Adventism. And it was mandatory for the earliest Adventists to be vegetarians because of these visions that she had, that Jesus was vegetarian, that God intended humans to be vegetarian. So,
Judith, do you want to now? There's the steps of health, the steps related to health for. But you wanted to. It looked like you wanted to jump in here. So
I did. I just wanted to say, Graham, that. The reason why also that we are vegetarians, when God created us, what Bob read from the Bible, Genesis 1:29, that was the original diet for man. And the reason why God had that original diet, because it's not just for us, as we're living on earth, but we believe that Jesus is coming soon. And when we live in the new earth, there'll be no killing. There'll be no blood shedding. So, and it's even in the Bible, where God tells us that our diet will be fruits. There'll be one tree with 12 different fruits on it, and we will eat fruits. So this is why it's important, and we stress the point as Adventists, it's better to eat a plant diet. And I mean, what tastes better, Ram, than fruits? Isn't it good?
I quite agree.
It's delicious.
But I think that the very fact that Ellen White prophesied that humans would become vegetarian and that it was necessary for them to prepare the ground for the second coming by embracing a vegetarian diet suggests that that Jesus himself was a vegetarian, and in fact she did envisage that he was a vegetarian in her prophecies.
Well, there's one small correction there, Ram. She never said that Jesus was a vegetarian. In fact, he was not a vegetarian. Jesus ate fish. It's very clear in the Bible that he did eat fish. It's very clear in Luke 24. You can read it from 38 to 46, I believe it is.
It's
42,
43.
Luke 24,
verse
42 and 43.
Well, that passage, is that the only instance in which he ate animal flesh?
Did you hear the question? Is that the only instance in which it's claimed that he ate animal flesh?
Mr. Barry, this is Jewel McKeever speaking to you. And there are other verses. There is a verse in Luke 22 that says Jesus participated in the Passover. And we do know from the Old Testament that the Passover involved the roasting of a lamb, and which, of course, is meat. And Jesus did partake of the Passover.
Well, I have many Jewish friends today who are ethical vegetarians who participate in the Passover, but they partake of a vegan Passover. And I suggest to you that Jesus did the same. In fact, in the Gospel of the Ebionites, he refuses to participate in the eating of lamb when he was invited to do so. And that passage that you quoted in Luke occurs after the resurrection. As an unresurrected being, there's no evidence that meat ever passed his lips. Animal flesh never passed his lips. And most scholars are in agreement that that is a dubious passage and probably an interpolation to suggest that he was human by eating fish. It completely contradicts everything that he stood for and everything that goes before in the other Gospels, in all the Gospels.
So, okay. So we've addressed fish and lamb, yes? Or?
And, you know, people also talk about the miracles of the loaves and the fishes. And they ask him, well, if he did that, then surely he must have been a carnivore. But as I point out in Food for the Gods, the earliest account of that miracle, which was collected by Irenaeus, who in his book Against All Heresies, was another church father. In that account, there's no mention of fish. It's simply bread. And
so where are you getting that from, Rim?
When you can translate the word, the verb, that passage, as I have done, from the Greek, the controlling verb is klao, which means to break and to tear. The object of the verb is the bread, not fish. How can you break and tear fish? And what? I've translated the gospel in the Gospel of John. In the description of that miracle, the word that is used for fish, opsaria, from the Greek word opson, has the dual meaning of relish.
Okay.
And that makes much more sense that he would be serving bread and relish rather than fish.
No, I mean, we can't assume. The Bible says it was fish. No.
Well, it says opsaria, which I said
Opsario.
Has a dual meaning. In fact, the first meaning of opsaria is relish, such as pickled olives or
it's dried
tahini,
fish.
Which was a popular dipping sauce in those days. You know, the Greeks, that's how they ate in the Mediterranean. They would take bread. They would tear off a piece of bread and dip it into the opson or the opsaria. So if he was serving anything at all at that miracle, I'm sure it was bread and relish rather than fish.
We only have about 2 or 3 minutes to continue our discussion here. Judith, did you want to jump in there? Or?
No, I just wanted to say that it's very clearly that Oscario is a dried fish that the Middle Eastern use. It's used, it's pickled, so that it, you know, back in those days they didn't have a way of preserving the fish. And that is the particular name to describe a dry fish. And they use pickles with it and whatever else.
Yeah, but as I explained, the first meaning of the word opsaria is relish. So the preferred meaning is vegetable matter, you know, such as tahini or, let's say, olives or... it's a dipping sauce or a spread that you put on bread. Fish is the secondary meaning. The original meaning of the word opson was simply relish, with no reference to animal flesh. I prefer to interpret it using the first meaning of the word opsaria, which means relish. It goes much better on bread than raw fish.
Okay. Judith, could you quickly, the health regimen for Adventists, if you could go over that. We have maybe a couple of minutes here before
sure.
we have to go on to our calendar.
But yeah. Okay. Well, you know, as Adventists, when we advocate health, we just don't encourage people to be vegetarian vegans. But there's 7 steps for being healthy. And when you apply these steps to our daily living, God blesses us with good health. For instance, it makes no sense just to be a vegan and not exercise. It makes no sense to be a vegan and smoke cigarettes. It makes no sense to be a vegan and do not trust in God. So here are the 7 principles. 1 is rest. 2 is sunlight. 3 is water. 4 is exercise. 5 is nutrition. 6, water. 7.
I think you said, did you say water already?
Temperance. So there's a 7. Should I say them again so we make sure we got them? Okay, 1 is water, sleep, rest, diet, temperance, exercise, trust in God. New start. We'll put that as the 8th one. And when we apply these 7 principles to our lives, to our diets, then that what makes us different as opposed to just being a vegan and do not have Christ as being the center of our lives. Because, you know, I don't know, Rem, if you realize this, but if you were sick and if I came to you, you were a vegan, and I came to you as a vegan and I said to you, well, Rem, you know, you're real sick. Oh, I wish you well. But then if you were sick and someone else came to you who loved the Lord and said, well, Rem, listen, here is 7 principles you can apply to your life. And as you begin to drink your water and get your sun and your rest and trust in God, and you realize the body begins to heal. Isn't that much better than just saying, I'm a vegan? I mean, what's the point of being a vegan without any trust in God, any hope in God? And well, this is the basis for the 7 principles that the Adventists believe.
Thank you, Judith Miranda. And Rin Berry is the author of Food for the Gods. Closing thoughts here, Rin? We have in the last few seconds we have.
Well, speaking of health, the sect to which Jesus belonged, the Essenes were noted by Josephus as being famous for their longevity. They were called macrobioi, which means long-lived. And in fact, Jesus' brother James was in his 90s when he was stoned to death. And the Essenes were noted for living to be to be centenarians and beyond. So they certainly enjoyed good health along with their high ethical devotion to nonviolent eating.
Well, thank you, Rin Berry. And how can people get a hold of your books or get in touch with you?
Food for the Gods is available at the best independent bookstores. You can order it from Barnes & Noble and Amazon.com, Food for the Gods, Vegetarianism and the World's Religions. And they can call me at and order it directly at 718-622-8002.
Thank you so much for being with us, Rin. And if you missed any of today's interview, it'll be on the website, goveganradio.com, permanently in cyberspace. You can listen as frequently as you like. Get your friends to listen also. I need to move on to the calendar right now because we are quickly running out of time. There are protests that are happening on April 2nd through the 4th related to the vivisection convention that's happening in the San Diego area. So Saturday, April 2nd, leafleting and public outreach at the San Diego Convention Center from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. And the meeting location is the Plaza at the Gas Lamp Quarter Trolley Station, 5th Avenue and Harbor Drive. San Diego Animal Advocates will be providing leaflets for volunteers to distribute to the public and to convention attendees, and you can get involved with that. Sunday, April 3rd, demonstration and street theater at the San Diego Convention Center, meeting at 11 a.m., a march and demonstration, 11:30 a.m. to 2 p.m., and that meeting location, the Plaza at the Gas Lamp Quarter Trolley Station. The theme will be the Mad Scientists, and there'll be people in bloodied white laboratory coats and monster masks just to set the theme right. So that's happening as there's the big vivisection animal experimenter convention in San Diego. A big convention of animal rights happening in New York City. Also, tell your friends it's happening, and you can go to the website for information on what's going on in New York. It's grassrootsar.org, grassrootsar.org, for the big animal rights convention that has lots of people attending. So I think you'll appreciate that one. Looking ahead to Earth Day for the animals. It's their planet, too. Reggae Music and Vegan Food Fest, Saturday, April 23rd, 1 p.m. to midnight, outdoors and indoors at Kung Food Restaurant at 2949 Fifth Avenue between Palm and Quince Streets near Balboa Park in San Diego, featuring two of San Diego's most exciting and popular reggae bands, Shock of Mighty, starting at 2 p.m., and Irie Side, starting at 5 p.m. I'll be hosting it. It's a benefit for Go Vegan Radio and our attempt to pay for the airtime here, sponsored by Whole Soy, specializing in dairy-like yogurt, smoothies, and frozen desserts made from whole organic soybeans. And we have special guest chef Carrie Brown coming down. We have a great menu: faux gras, global norming, nachos, greenhouse greens, save the forest, African fruit salad, Kyoto Japanese chicken, Chinese sustainable spring rolls, Indian no worry curry, Middle Eastern peace by pita and hummus, French give quiche a chance, and peace by pita and the cheeseburger that saved the world. And we'll be trying the new Whole Soy cream cheese style soy spread. Enjoy that on a bagel. We'll be giving away pairs of Earth Vegan footwear. Earth Vegan footwear. You, the most comfortable shoes I've worn. I'm wearing my Navigators right now. And just took a long walk this week, totally comfortable all the way through. Earth Vegan footwear, the only footwear featuring the famous Calso negative heel technology designed by Danish yoga master Anne Calso, promoting a natural way of walking. Totally vegan, no animal products whatsoever, certified by the UK Vegan Society. You can go to the website earthvegan.us. Earthvegan.us, you can order from the website, or you can stop by All Vegan, 4669 Park in University Heights. Again, that's earthvegan.us. Earthvegan.us, 877-746-3364. And then the week after Earth Day for the animals, we will be bowling for the animals. A great way to start off Be Kind to Animals Week with bowling for the animals. And I invite you now to solicit support from your coworkers, your classmates, your friends. Let them pledge to support you when you bowl that day. Maybe somebody will pledge $1 per pin, or $5 per pin, or 10 cents per pin if you're a really good bowler, you know. So I'll be bowling, and you can support me, pledge, you know. You bowl three games. I do intend to bowl 300 that day. Among my three games, I'm sure it'll come out to at least 300, huh? So let's say I bowl 100, and you said you'd donate $1 per pin. Well, then you would be donating $100. And then that gets split up among four great animal organizations: the House Rabbit Society, St. Nicholas Hope for Animals, and San Diego Animal Advocates, and Go Vegan Radio. So we certainly could use your support for that. And you can go to the website for information. It's bowlingfortheanimals.org. bowlingfortheanimals.org. It will be a blast, and so we hope to see you there also. And next week we'll talk more about events coming up in the near future. Lots of news to discuss, which I hope to get to next week. Congratulations to Pamela Ferdin and her co-defendant in their case. It was up in the legal journal, the Daily Journal, right up on them, and they won their case, and now they're suing for $3 million. So I have to stay friends with her. Maybe she'll make a donation to the show. So how was the lasagna? The lasagna that we had, you know. Judith called me. She heard this show a while back and said, who's talking about vegetarianism on the radio? So she dragged me out to some meetings, and we've gotten together, and I've cooked a few things, and the lasagna went over well. Huh? So, all right. So, let's see. Oh, yeah, I see the clock there. We're just about running out of time. Okay, go to the website, goveganradio.com. You can make a tax-deductible donation. You want to say something? Well, no. Okay.
Yeah, I
want
to thank you for having
What's that?
I want to thank you for having us here.
Oh, thank you for coming in. We appreciate it.
And always gone. What fun.